Click one more button here, and we are just about ready to go for this week's episode. Really excited. Got a good group here. Should be a very interesting conversation. Today, we're talking about building smarter organizations, transforming to intelligent operations. And we're just going to give everybody a few chances to join. It is actually only turning 11 o'clock Eastern time as we speak. We've got a full house of guests today. Hello, Matthew. Just do a sound check for us.
Yes. Hello. I'm here. Thank you.
Great. You're welcome. So we're just giving everybody a few seconds to join our episode today, Building Smarter Organizations, Transforming to Intelligent Operations. Our episode today is sponsored by QuickBase, and I want to thank QuickBase for the long-term partnership they've had with Star CIO and with the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. If you're listening, come say hello. Hello, Derek. Thank you again for getting that started. Hello, Gene. Hello, Uday. Good to see you again. We're just giving everybody a few seconds to join here just at 11 o'clock starting to see the numbers come up. So we'll get started pretty quickly. Hello, John. Good to see you. Got a lot of updates for everybody today, so we'll get through that later on. But today, we're talking about building smarter organizations, transforming to intelligent operations. This is, you know, for those of you who have been on previous coffee hours, we've gotten into the weeds around operations a number of times. We've talked about this notion of gray work, where we don't have connected systems, we don't have great user experiences, we have a lot of swivel chairs between moving data from one system to another, we're using a lot of email for communications, we've talked a lot about dynamic work management, the ability to connect all of our different work streams, and be able to essentially connect what is happening in the field with what is happening in our back office. And so this is today, this is our next conversation around this. And we've talked about pragmatic AI around this. We're going to talk about what intelligent operations is all about. What does it mean to have a smarter organization? And to get us started today, I want to welcome our special guest, Matt. Is it Matthew or Matt Fry?
It's Matthew Fry.
Matthew, thank you. Thanks for joining us today. And I want to start off with just sort of a softball, because whenever we toss terms out here, whether it's a new term or a term that's been around for a while, in this case, intelligent operations is something we've been talking about for at least a decade, if not longer. And so I want to get your perspective. What does it mean today for folks who have field operations, for those in manufacturing and construction? What should be the top of our mind when we're talking about intelligent operations? Thank you, Matthew, for joining us from QuickBase.
Absolutely. First, would you like me to go on video, or is this more than efficient? Is this fine?
This is fine. We have a nice whiteboard here that you're okay, welcome great. To Perfect. Contribute to. But yeah, we try to stay audio only because our fans love it that way.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it. You know, when we talk about intelligent operations today, it's really speaking to visibility and control across the field and back to the office. So, you know, when you look at construction, you look at manufacturing and all the different things that can go into play when we're talking about digitization and transformation of your, you know, like data across from office to field and field to office, and what you're trying to collect. Really, it's automating that frontline data collection, connecting, you know, the data and workflows and dashboards to the decision makers, and really reducing those manual handoffs that we have that can cause problems, eliminating, you know, silos, and really supporting that agile response that we need to see that, you know, can improve anything from safety risks and assessments and issues that might be occurring in the field, and allowing the office to act quickly and respond to that.
You used a word there around agile, and I was about to just note it down here. What does that mean to you?
That would mean the ability to quickly adjust according to a scenario that might come your way, right? So if there was an incident out in the field, the ability to quickly respond to that. And that could also be, you know, materials arrive on a job site that are not in a great condition, to be able to show that back to the main office where they can adjust and work with their supply chain to get a new delivery out, meaning quickly moving on those items from field to office, allowing for there to be response time that would keep you on time and on track to hitting your goals.
Got it. All the things that, you know, you have to sort of prepare for, but, you know, on a day-to-day basis, there's surprises. There's things that you have to prepare for. And, whether it's a weather issue or a material issue or a staffing or a skill issue. Before I want to go around the room a little bit and get everybody's opinion on this, before I let you go, Matt, why is this hard? Why are we still talking about intelligent operations? We've had mobile and tablet devices for a while. We've gotten, you know, an entire generation of people working in the field to using electronic tools. What are some of the challenges that make intelligent operations still something that we have to pay attention to?
Well, I mean, I would say right out the gate, you know, it's systems working together to create visibility across the board, right? And I would just say, you know, the more that you have your systems working in combination with one another, so from the field to the office, so if you have a mobile solution in the field, when you collect that data, having that data directly go into dashboards and into a system that can do predictive analysis, that's going to help us, you know, better understand and be more automated in our approach. And so I think, you know, to this day, companies have struggled by picking this solution and that solution and then trying to tie them together to make them effective. So the more that we can have solutions that work together to tell the story from a visible from the whole perspective, holistic perspective from A to Z, the better we are, right? So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what first came to mind.
No, that's great. I'm going to throw that same question to Joanne. Joanne is our resident Industry 5.0 manufacturing expert. What does intelligent operations mean to you, Joanne, and why is it still a challenge today?
To me, it means agentic AI. It means AI. It's still a challenge because if you look at the way systems have to be integrated in order to have real-time feedback, and that could be equipment off the shop floor, it's not easy to put that stuff together. It takes a long time and it's very, very difficult. But it also means that there will be an impact to things like predictive maintenance windows, spare parts management and ordering, unexpected downtime. In other words, something breaks on the plant floor, you immediately have to get either an in-house technician involved, which implies a notification system. And if it's not fixable, if that's a word, for the in-house person to call an OEM, get their technician in, it may be much longer in terms of the response and the downtime. And if we look at factories in particular, we're talking anywhere between $125,000 per hour to up to $2.1 million per hour for a larger automotive. So think about a big car factory going down. The seconds count. And also that brings the question of latency, of being able to get the information to the main office, to dispatch people, whether it's on the local, on the plant floor, or a remote location of that, you know, like a satellite of that plant. So it's very complicated stuff. And operational intelligence is kind of table stakes these days for large manufacturing organizations, maybe not as much in construction, although I'm sure time is money to them just as much.
We will hear from Joe later about construction, but I agree with you. Agentic AI, I think, is a leapfrog in capabilities. It's layered on our ability to do, you know, mobile interconnected workflows and predictive. It's
Yeah.
going to provide a lot more capability for the folks in the field to be expressive and to be more productive and safer. So a lot of good nuances there. I want to keep going around the group. Liz, I think you raised your hand first. Welcome
Yeah,
to the
I
floor.
did. I did. Thank you. This is fascinating because just to keep us grounded in the basics, which is sort of what I like to do on this program, we've been looking at process mapping and especially in the manufacturing field for, decades and decades, right? We've been looking at trying to streamline and improve our workflows in all processes across all of our many, many things that we do in operations. This is just sort of like the next level of tools to help us keep that throughput and keep that flow going. I think everybody knows from all of our backgrounds that any kind of breakdown in the flow is going to cost money and time. Time equals money, right? I love the way Joanne just said that, right? Time is money, and really in any of these flows when you have a break. And what can we do from in an agile way, not the agile as in methodology, but an agile as in quick, to leverage these AI tools, these agents, to solve these problems as fast as possible, predict these problems or get ahead of these problems so that we can, it's just the next tool in the toolbox.
The next tool in the toolbox, or kick in the rear to get your organization outfitted a little bit faster, a little bit more real time, a little bit more interconnected, and sort of the amplifying effect with agentic AI coming as a what could be a field ops game changer. Martin, what's your experience with intelligent operations? What's your definition and its challenges?
Well, I think intelligent operations can mean almost anything you want it to mean. But I was going to paint a little picture. So, building a little bit on what Joanne was saying. So, you've got a maintenance supervisor walking through a large plant. He's using intelligent a head-up display on his glasses, whatever you want. He's walking along. He looks at a piece of machinery. Instantly, it intelligently identifies what that piece of machinery is. It provides core data about what that machine's doing, its performance. Maybe it's showing what it should be doing in terms of speed versus what it is. He's showing he can easily just click to look at maintenance logs on that machine, etc. So I'm just kind of, painting that picture. He carries on his walk through the plant, comes across another piece of machinery. Same thing. Head-up display shows him some information about that, and it flags to him that there's a potential issue starting to build in that machine. So it's intelligently reviewing the information related to the machine and identifying some things to him. So he's then able to dig in further using the intelligent tools available to him, pull data from other things, pull maybe a history of that machine and previous breakdowns. Is able to say, I'm concerned, there. And obviously, how much of a human intervention is needed these days in some of that, how much of that can be totally automatic, et cetera, et cetera. But then it's able to say, okay, we need to order some parts. We need to actually fit that into a maintenance schedule to do some preventative maintenance at the next window. And all of that kind of review of the situation is leading to a whole set of actions automatically generated in terms of checking the parts store, ordering parts, checking with the manufacturer, checking the production schedule, when's the next downtime window where we can take that machine down to actually do some maintenance on it, et cetera, et cetera. So to kind of go back to what Joanne said in terms of the massive amount of money that it, a light, when a line goes down, and how much intelligent tools like this can actually interrogate the information and prevent things like that. So it's just kind of painting that picture.
Martin, that picture, I think, for me is inspiring. I mean, when I think about folks working in the field, and now I'm bringing all this new capability for them to get alerted, get inspired about what the systems are telling them, what they can do to make an impact, either to make something more efficient, fix things more proactively, address a quality issue. This is not, the world of I got a ticket and I have to go to a machine and change a part. This is I'm part of the entire fabric of the operations now, and I'm using technology and partnering with and leveraging that technology to actually make a difference. It's just a different mindset in two industries that, you know, have at least for the last decade have struggled to maintain and hire people and to get people interested in working in the industry. And so it might be a game changer over the next few years as we get to more intelligent operations. I want to go to Derek next, and then I want to hear from Joe about construction. Go ahead, Derek.
Yes, good morning. Yeah, so when you look at the intelligence operations, it really depends on the industry that you're working with. So I know Joanne talked about manufacturing and healthcare earlier. I've dealt with healthcare. So healthcare, one of the challenges they have is they've got all these different devices that need to be calibrated. And employing things like remote sensor technology, RTLS, or sensory technology to find out where all this equipment may be helps to minimize the risk of these things not being calibrated when they need to be so for life and death type situations. So really it's looking at what you've got in place and how you're making it work. But what tools and processes and automated technology, as everybody's talking about the automation, that's going to be key. So when I've got intelligence tools that can actually monitor what I need to know, if it's a sensory thing for piece of equipment or machinery to predict when it's going to fail before it fails, that gives me the ability then to better prepare for that. And makes it, as I talked about agility, have that agile mindset where now I know it's going to fail. Let me fix it before it fails, as opposed to having to work with downness and production and other things and moving forward. I'm also looking at the risk associated with all this and the impact, as you mentioned, time is money. So if I have any piece of equipment fail or it's not calibrated, how's that going to affect my income? How's it going to affect revenue stream? How's it going to affect the time I need to do my other daily operation as far as the snowball effect? And just looking at the risk associated with that, you know, what my thing is also going into frameworks. You know, what kind of framework are they working to when it comes to these processes? So I like the ITIL version 4 because it's more of a business risk operational type standard to work with to kind of cover a lot of these different things. And it also helps align as everything works with an IT infrastructure. How can I now align those IT services with the business and improve an operational efficiency across everything within my ecosystem? So it really is a big picture. But the other thing that Matt mentioned earlier is the communication. You have to, these things need to be communicated throughout as far as what are the challenges, what are the pain points, what are the things that really need to be resolved, and how am I measuring that? What are the metrics associated with that moving forward?
Wow. I want to go to Joe next, just keep expanding the field, and then to John. Joe, there's a statement here from Ashish on the comment stream. Folks, thank you so much for all the comments. Some really interesting thing ones here. But Ashish says operational intelligence is almost becoming table stakes. Is that true in construction? What do you make of that?
Well, I put a couple of comments up. As you and I both know, BIM has been around, what, 10, 15 years at least. Prefabrication has been around. BIM, we would today, I think we'd call it digital twins, right? It's a digital representation of a construction site, bringing all the layers of the planning together. IoT devices, drones being used, all this stuff is there and has been there for years. What are the inhibitors? Why is this not happening? And the answer is there's a lot of social, political, I said social twice, didn't I? Yeah, social, political, and cultural issues that prevent wide adoption. Now, what I think is different today, Isaac, and to Ashish's comment, I think the shrinking workforce, the lack of professionals in, you know, plumbing and carpentry, and especially with the diminution of immigrants being blocked from coming into this country, with the labor force being constrained, both skilled and unskilled, it's going to drive construction to where these technologies will become table stakes, or you just won't be able to deliver.
Thanks, Joe. Let's go to John, Joanne, and then I want to come back to Matt. Hey, Joanne. Hey, John, what do you have for us?
Hey, Isaac. Yeah, thank you for having me on. And I was spent 4 years actually at a company that built software for this area. And we built software to help kind of figure out what was going on large semi trucks. We built software that was on the Coke dispensers that are you could pick the button and make your own kind of Coke flavored, you know, Fanta plus something else. And we worked on electrical meters. And it's a really really hard problem to solve. We thought that IoT would just make it for software companies, but there's so many challenges. Like out in the field, a lot of the devices were they're built and they have like really long shelf lives. But like when we look at the technology, there's like every couple of years, people kind of release a new set of standards and a new set of IP, like well, our data transmitting standards. And so we have all these devices out in the field that often last for years and years and years, but like the technology on the software side is really rapidly evolving, right? And so there's really it's like there's no one common like way for all these things to communicate. And there's actually, every couple of years they come out with a standard that everyone's supposed to use. And then the other problem that's really, really hard is that whoever controls this, has a ton of control. And like as a device manufacturer, do you really want some third party to have control over everything? And so there's all these control issues from all the different parties involved. And so that when you look at it, there's so many fragmented solutions that it's often really hard to have a good solution for a set of devices or across a company.
There you go. I mean, I think that's the push and pull between standardizing on fewer tools and picking best in breed and finding ways to integrate them. I mean, I agree with also what Joe said is, if it's table stakes for intelligent operations and agentic AI is going to push the envelope, and Chris Miller on the comment stream is just came back from NVIDIA. He saw all the robots and all the AI that's coming down the road. This should be a shot in the arm for manufacturers, construction, anybody with field services to go back and say, we better step up our game plan. Joanne, and then we'll hear back from Matt around this. Go ahead, Joanne.
One of the things that I wanted to make sure that people understand as well is it's not just about table stakes and time to value for your customers. There's an element that always has to be considered, and that's human in the loop. And one of the things that most companies overlook is that, and especially to Joe's comment about enamoring people to go and work in the trades or in manufacturing, is that we have all this wonderful technology, but we must capture the expertise of the workforce, not only before it retires, but also to use for training new people entering that workforce. So, in order to do that, it's another level of dimension. And again, this is where agentic AI and other forms of AI start to come in because we can actually use these technologies through the prompting. If you think about a ChatGPT or any other large language model, if you create a way to capture through the prompting people's intrinsic or institutional knowledge, you are simply making your operational intelligence that much more powerful. Because how often is it that, and Martin will probably be able to attest to this as well. We work in manufacturing. We know that, a technician is going to have a problem with a machine and they start looking for, well, did this happen before? And what was the root cause? And they'll find somebody's notes from maybe 10 years earlier, and that's really the solution to their problem. But it wasn't captured anywhere. So it's really, really important that we have to tell our audience that they need to look at the human in the loop side. And the other reason that I wanted to jump into this is very quickly, just to say that agents are meant to run autonomously. I don't know a single huge manufacturer in the world that's going to trust an agent right out of the gate. So you need to show reliability. You need to show that the data is clean and accurate and get into all the data management things before you release one of these into the wild. So human in the loop starts to figure in because over time, you can make sure the agent is running well, build the trust across all of your stakeholder groups, and then say, okay, now I want to flip a switch and make it go autonomous because we've all agreed we trust the system enough, we trust our data quality enough, we know that we're not taking a huge financial or brand risk.
That's a great, great segue, Joanne. I want to bring Matthew back in. Matthew, you got a lot of data points here around intelligent operations. Any last thoughts on that topic? And then I want to jump in and talk about data collection and collaboration and safety.
Yeah. So I don't know if you're getting echo. Maybe that's on my side.
We heard it for a bit, but I think we're okay now.
Okay. Yeah, so I think I would just wrap up there that I absolutely love this discussion around, what we're talking about with mainly being able to decipher the lag and lead indicators and using maybe agentic, AI in order to accomplish that. And I think what I heard from Joanne is absolutely right. It's like we're stepping into this world where more and more of the customers I've been working with on a daily basis are really wanting to tap into that. Hey, I have this data. It's good data. We know it's quality data. But now I want to really push into how can I take this data that I currently have and use, AI to impact my future decisions and give me predictive analysis. So I'm excited. That kind of feeds into our next discussion here with data and collaboration. But I would just say I really like what was brought up through this whole conversation so far. So, yeah.
Thank you, Matthew. So let's just jump right in, right? You already mentioned one aspect of data collection that I think is really important. We talked a little bit about real time. We're also beyond just speaking about the notion of forms, where we're just keying in things or we're using checklists to go look things up. We're talking more collaborative experiences. We're talking more multi-modal experiences with imagery, with AR, VR experiences. And we're connecting physical and the physical and the digital worlds, right? The importance of helping a field operations person become more safe and using technologies to guide them on more safety. So I want your perspective. How can we improve all of this in this, race to have more intelligent operations?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and I think that's something that everybody's asking. But I would say, out the gate, as we continue to evolve, the ability to use AI, one of the things that was brought up was, the video capture or the ability to wear, glasses and to be able to use photos and images and video. So, one of the customers I work with out of Australia, it's interesting, because what they're trying to do is get everybody home safe every day, right? And so that really incorporates the field and the office and the need to, for example, take photos of vehicles and have the AI be able to understand, is there an issue that the individual is not physically seeing, like are the tires worn and so forth and so on. So that predictive analysis that could be coming in from the field that maybe the person, and to Joanne's point, we're talking about human individuals collecting this data, doing the very best they can to keep themselves safe and others. Just that data coming in, right? And even those photos being able to be analyzed by non-humans in a way that could predict, wow, those tires are more bald than they should be as far as, wear and tear. We should have them, fixed. And that could eliminate, an accident or other issues. So point being is we really are going to be in a place where we're going to be getting, this data that's coming in. It's going to be, put through filters through the AI, and then that's going to give visibility to your leadership in the office in order to make good decisions and keep people safe, on a daily basis. I'm coming from a very field level view, so I know others on this call may be coming from a different area, so that's why I think we're all here together. But I'm saying, from what I hear on a daily basis, I'm going to be a little bit more of that input from the field level to the office, right? So I'd love to hear others' thoughts on this.
Thank you, Matthew. You know what I liked about your answer is, that sort of 360 field. I got a photo. It's doing a prediction for me. It's giving me, it's alerting me about an issue or an incident. I mean, that's direct benefit for people in the field. It's not just data collection so that we are capturing back in the office to make our AIs better. I mean, that's certainly part of it. But that sort of 360 where the person who is actually collecting the data is actually seeing the benefit. I'd love to hear more examples of that. I want to hear more examples of how, we can get time to decision. I know Joanne has talked a lot about that. We're going to come right back to that after my break. We'll go straight to Martin. Folks, I want to thank everybody for joining this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. This week, we are talking about building smarter organizations and transforming to intelligent operations. Our episode this week is brought to you by QuickBase. QuickBase is the AI-powered operation platform used by more than 12,000 organizations worldwide. Wow. To transform ordinary work into extraordinary impact, combining powerful AI capabilities and the flexibility and ease of low-code, no-code technology, QuickBase boosts productivity, improves efficiency, and enhances employee safety for organizations managing large-scale projects and operations in industries like construction and manufacturing. Founded in 1999, think about that. QuickBase is headquartered in Boston with teams in London, Sofia, Bangalore. For more information about QuickBase, please visit www.quickbase.com. Amazing, 1999. I think I became my first QuickBase application I built back in 2001. It's a long, long history of low code, no code, and now AI. Martin, let's talk about data collection. Let's talk about collaboration. What are we doing differently with real time? What are we doing with improving safety? You know, what is that? Tell us another story if you can.
Okay, so I do have a kind of a story and how something's built. It kind of builds on what Matthew was saying. So we've had some safety systems around large, you know, if you think about a sawmill or something like that, a massive yard where you've got loaders moving around, you've got people moving around, they've got big loads, people are obscured, so you have safety issues. So we've had safety systems where people are wearing active badges and machines have detectors in them, so they can actually see if there's another machine or a person around a blind corner or whatever else, and can actually actively apply the brakes of a machine if needed. So we've had those types of things for a while, and yes, bigger places are starting to actually deal with that. So it's actually active detection of people and things like that. But now some of that's with use of artificial intelligence is getting taken to the next level. If you're tracking movements of all people and all machines in a large yard, yeah, and except this may be, you know, hundreds of acres or whatever else, you can, yeah, optimize movement of machinery as well as deal with safety. You can look at, are we wasting a lot of time moving around the yard? And how can we actually rearrange the yard to minimize travel? And that's all cost and efficiency. So, yeah, it's starting to kind of converge in terms of what started maybe with safety is getting into efficiency, optimization, rearrangement. All of these things are coming together. So it's just kind of how artificial intelligence is adding an additional layer of capability on top.
I like the notion of safety driving efficiency, Martin, but you know, you work with a lot of decision makers. You know, if you're pitching this intelligent operations and real-time data collection and its benefits, and it's to a mid-sized manufacturer, where are you leading this with? You know, are you leading with efficiency? Are you leading with, you know, empowering the workforce? Are you leading with safety, particularly in manufacturing? Where are you starting from?
Well, I think you kind of lead on two different fronts. One is safety, because the cost of a safety incident is massive. And not just in reputation, in terms of actually, yeah, Joanne said earlier, downtime. Yeah, if you have some form of serious injury, you have got a significant downtime and a significant impact on your business. And then on reputational side on top of that as well. So that's a big thing, and people are very interested in that. And then from an operational perspective, the whole efficiency piece, yeah, how are you going to drive improved efficiency and real savings that can be generated by using that type of approach?
Let's go to Joanne, and then I'm going to come back to you, Matthew. I have a follow-up question. Go ahead, Joanne.
I just want to key off of another perspective to what Martin was talking about. It's not just, it is definitely people first, safety number one, and then operational efficiency, but think about it as something slightly different, which is the same data that's being used to provide safety and provide operational efficiency could also be used by a C-level executive to say, how can I expand my revenue and grow because I have unused space, or I can optimize the space that I currently have to take on more work. So there's an innovation, a growth and a revenue stream that can also be created using the same data. Context is what matters in AI. It's not data. Strategic use of that context and strategic use of the data drives revenue just as much as it can drive cost efficiency. And of course, with safety being the issue, you can also capture the knowledge of the workforce to improve your safety standards, because beep beep behind a truck is not enough. And now we have robots to deal with as well. So we have these other elements that are coming into the play that makes us step back, and especially pitching to a C-level about a product or a service is, what are the upsides? What are the downsides in terms of cost? And what are the gives and the gets? If you have gives that include growth, resiliency, all of those wonderful words, you're far better off than if you're only looking at one little piece of the pie called cost optimization. It's a big piece, no doubt, but it's definitely worth offsetting it with the ability to grow capacity, grow revenue, become more innovative, etc.
I love that this just the picture you drew for me, Joanne. You know, beep beep is not enough for a truck that's about to come into you, or a forklift that's moving in the wrong direction. I mean, I think all the things that can go wrong, and how we can use technology to help avoid those issues. Matthew, I want to come back to you because I want to hear more about what's happening in field ops. What I usually find is, as much as there's a ton of benefit. From a strategic level, from an executive level, and whether it's efficiency, whether it's cost and risk avoidance around safety, it's the people in the field that will drive change when they see the benefit. And you know, when you talked about mobile technologies 10, 15 years ago, you know, a lot of it was, you know, is the four person going to use this technology? I think we're a little past that. And I want to really get into like what is happening in the field that gets them excited about being a part of intelligent operations.
Yeah, that's a great question. And so I would say just out the gate that the conversation around, you know, using mobile out in the field, I agree with you, we're kind of beyond that. But I would say that, you know, having a clean UI, having the offline capabilities from that boots on the ground perspective is super important. And so making that, you know, form or whatever it is they're filling out as clean and as simple as possible. And I think the future is going to be more speaking to, you know, the forms, or even like as we get into, you know, the future of where things are going, it might be completing the form as you're just working in the field in numerous ways. But I'm not going to go there. My point being is that there's a lot to come when it comes to how teams work in the field. Utilizing, you know, mobile devices. The end result, though, is there's a lot of levels, right? You know, number one, you need to get the forms out, or those, let's call it a form that gets out to the mobile device. It's either dispatched or they open up that form. They're going to be filling out that form. And, you know, to make it really nice for the teams, and what I hear most teams get excited about is just the fact that they can, you know, take those pictures, annotate on top of pictures, have GPS tagging and time stamping, signature capture. Little things get the teams excited, because ultimately, let's talk about safety. When you are able to show, like, from, let's say there's 20 teams out in the field and they're all across a continent, right? And you have them working in all these different remote areas. One team, for example, I have a customer that does utility and vegetation cleanup, you know, actually it's vegetation cleanup around utility lines and stuff like that. So they're taking down trees, and there's, you know, dangerous operations. And so when they come up to a tree that they're going to remove, and there maybe is a beetle that's impacted that tree, you know, one team doing, you know, cutting down that tree and realizing, hey, they could have done that differently, and they take pictures of that. It gets back to the safety team. That safety team can analyze that, and then they do toolbox talks across all 20 teams. So the next day, all the teams can learn from what that one team did. So again, this is kind of an off story, but the idea is that the more that we have data coming in, and the more that those teams get excited and adopt, that sort of situation, the more that we're going to be informed from an operational side, the more that we can provide safety and other items to those individuals back to the field. So I think what happens is this field teams begin to feel like they're part of the process rather than they're just being dictated to that you need to do X, Y, and Z. They're now being able to be part of the strategy versus just, hey, do this, and do this, and hopefully everybody's going to be safe, right? Yeah, so.
Matthew, you completely read into what I was what was trying to get at is this notion of being part of the discussion and the decision, the sharing information among a wider group of people. Again, your example may sound extreme, but I don't think it is. I mean, there's just lots of things that happen in the real world where getting a broader perspective very quickly is important. And then when you get down to like even the more basic stuff, I remember seeing the first forms that went out on mobile devices, and the person behind, in the office was creating them and creating forms with 60 fields on them, expecting somebody in the field to have all that patience to go fill that in, and not using any kind of decision tree or logic to be able to decide what's really important to capture. I only have 3 minutes with the four person to capture this data. And so that all falls into intelligent operations. And then your last piece of it is we're building up knowledge in real time. Right, we're creating a use case that's going to have value for the organization. Joanne brought that up earlier. The importance of creating knowledge and the importance of being able to go back and reference that later on. I think that all plays out here. I got John raising his hand. John, love your perspective. John?
Sorry, let me hit that mute button a few more times. I couldn't agree with you more on this. Once you start having good systems collect data, now that you have the data, like all sorts of neat stuff is happening, being able to go back and look and analyze the data. And before we had like good ways to really connect to our field systems and to our people doing stuff remotely. Like a lot of the data would be in file cabinets. And so we would at previous companies would try to help companies build, analytical models to for industrial applications, but when they were pointing at the data basically in a file cabinet, it's not really accessible, right? And it's not the right data. And so, like being able to actually capture what people are doing onto the systems that they use, and being able to record the outcomes allows us to start matching up activities with good outcomes, and then in the future start directing people to do the activities that give the good outcomes. And so that way we can take the best knowledge from the whole company and share that with everyone. So if somebody finds a best practice, that gets shared out with everyone now.
Thanks, John. There's a conversation going on the comment stream. I want to thank. I see Robert here has made a couple comments around data itself, and really, there was a comment earlier around AI governance and data governance. We talk about data collection, and we're working out in the field, so we're sort of balancing, how much to collect and how to do it in a form factor that works with the ability to collect clean data, accurate data, timely data. I want to maybe go to Martin around this. Martin, what are your thoughts about data collection and how we do this not only efficiently for the people out in the field, but accurately so that the data leads to real-time decisions, accurate ones, and then later being able to use for knowledge bases and AI and predictive modeling. Do you have any thoughts around this?
Well, I think the fundamental piece to remember at the start of this is people have jobs to do. Their job is not to sit there on a tablet or on a phone inputting data. So, as you kind of commented and others commented just a second ago, it's how do you make it as simple as possible to capture information? I won't say data, I'll say information. So, that's data and context. So that you can actually utilize that and it will help them to do their job. So you've got to focus on what is their job. So for example, if it's a manufacturing person, they've got a job in manufacturing. Their job is not to enter data. So how do you make it as quick and as simple as possible? How can you automatically collect data? Use of IoT devices, use of sensors of various forms. How can you use images to collect data? All of these things. So how do you get away from just having to fill in a form so that you minimize it and you actually make it as easy as possible? So yes, there's going to be times where they actually have to put some comments in, some text in. Can they do it via verbal, speech to text or whatever else? But it's how do you make it as easy and as simple as possible and focus on letting them do their job?
Perfect. You're already being quoted in the comment stream around that. Their job is not to sit on the phone and input data. It's brilliant. I want to go to Liz and then Joanne, and then I'm going to go to my third question about smarter organizations. Hi, Liz.
Yeah, I was just thinking about what Martin was saying, and actually it was right on top of mind as well, that because there's so much fear in organizations around, and going back to what Joe said about the politics and the social aspects of leveraging some of these tools, the fear of being replaced, the fear of how these tools are actually going to be used is very real, and that resistance is going to stop the project, or well, at least slow the progress. So anything that we can do to help people understand the context and the flow of what's actually happening and how they're integral to the process and how these tools are tools to help them in the process will actually create that alignment and actually, have them see them as the next, it's no longer a hammer or a chisel or a cell phone, it's just the next level of a tool. So, good point, Martin.
I love the introduction to context right before Joanne is about to speak, because she will always bring that up. Go ahead, Joanne. How we do the data part well is, I guess, the broad question.
Well, I think we have to wrap our brains around the fact that the, standard PowerPoint of leveled up diagramming is dead, and UI isn't at an inflection point where it is rapidly changing, not so much to be UI that we visually look at and have to enter data into, but really think about it more like a chain of thought, a conversation that you're having in your in maybe even just in your own mind about what you're doing when you're doing your job. And it's not about neural linking or anything like that. I'm not following that path. What I'm trying to say is we need to be multimodal, multilingual, and meet the user at their threshold of availability, not at ours. So, from a system design perspective, we're now moving in a way where we know with all of the AI models, the frontier models, you can speak to them, you can upload a document, you can upload an image. Caveat, you have to be very careful to double check their work, but there's nothing that says that I can't be speaking as my data entry point while I'm doing a particular job in the field. There's also nothing that says I can't use a digital twin to do that data input for me. So I think there's going to be less emphasis on UI and UX, and there's going to be more emphasis on using human senses, meaning our visual acuity, our speech, et cetera, and appealing to us in our own dialects. I mean, some of you guys know I think in French and speak in English. Well, okay, that's me. But there are a lot of people out there that are like that. There are also people who have some learning disabilities that would absolutely love not having to type anything. That's where I think the biggest change is going to come. And to Liz's point, that and Joe's point, that's where the socialization and the least path of resistance is going to come from. And I'm starting to see more and more of this emerge.
Joanne, I love the introduction of just personalization, knowing that there isn't going to be one way of doing this. We've got about 10 minutes left. I want to go into our last question. And Joe, I want to throw this first at you around smarter organizations. The question is, how does intelligent operations improve back office decision making and enable a smarter organization? I remember, there was what was in the construction project schedule, and then there was the real world. There was what was in the blueprints, and now the BIM model, and then there's what was in the real world. There's trying to understand how do we make sure our construction project is profitable? And then there's the question, how do we estimate better and estimate smarter and know what projects to go after because we're getting better data from the field? So talk to me about what smarter organizations should be looking like and how does intelligent operations feed that?
I think to overcome the resistance, we should be taking into account, as Joanne would say, the human in the loop. We should be investing in smart tools, tools that augment the human's ability to measure so that we can construct faster and more accurately, watch what someone is doing so they can be safer, watch the, if you're tightening a nut. Measure the torque so that it's exactly where it should be. As the tools become smarter, they help the individual in the field. And by the way, all the data that they are collecting about the time and effort going into and the quality of the construction, that can all feed back to that big database in the sky, which through artificial intelligence, machine learning can help us to better understand and estimate future jobs, to staff them properly, to move equipment and materials in a more timely fashion, and just generally lower the overall cost and deliver higher value.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for joining today. We have a raised hand from Derek about talking about smarter organizations. Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, the smarter organizations is also looking at the business culture and people understanding what is their role when it comes to the smarter organization. We just can't say we want to be smart and not have any responsibilities or accountability as far as what are you going to be doing. The biggest fear people say with artificial intelligence is going to replace my job, and as we've been talking about, it's just to supplement and complement, not replace. But I think the communication and the clear communication of what does that really mean for me, what does it mean for my business unit. How is it really going to help me? And in this case, we talked about the maintenance or the construction or other type pieces. How is it going to make my job easier in what I'm trying to do? Smart organization, everybody has to be pulling in the same direction. Everybody has to understand what they need to do and how to do it, but then also how to use artificial intelligence properly to make it effective.
I love this, Derek. It's a great comment, and I'm wondering if anybody wants to chime in on around this. Does smarter organization does is that a culture driver that mid-size in particular mid-size manufacturers and construction companies anybody with field operations can really get people more involved in, and not just in terms of being able to collect data, but collaboration. They're contributing to a safer and more efficient and smarter organization. Go ahead, John. I love your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think organizations that do this really well, they recognize that there's really smart people at all levels in the company, and the knowledge doesn't flow from the top down to the people out in the field. And like I was in an Uber, right? And the guy actually had another job where he was fixing things, and I won't name the company, but it's a car company. And he was talking about how his company was so amazing that they would actually take feedback from the technicians, and that if you like found a better way to do something, they would actually give you like a $1,000 bonus. This was one of the Japanese car companies, and so he was so happy that he worked at a company that at his levels of technician, the whole company would adopt a standard if he found a better way to do something.
You win the prize, John. We're going to talk about changing the incentive models somewhere in the next 2 months. I think we just need to cover that. I think that needs part of the equation. Matthew, I want to bring you back in here. And just maybe share another story or another idea around where field operations is doing something with intelligent operations, becoming more intelligent, where you're seeing it make an impact back in the back office and making a smarter organization overall.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you. And I really have appreciated everybody's input here. It's so great to be a part of this, and love what everybody's saying. So what I would say is just listening in and kind of being a part of this discussion. Whenever we think about, like, let's just say manufacturing and construction, there's all these different departments, right? So in manufacturing, you're gonna have your quality assurance, maintenance over equipment. You have your EHS or safety teams, your logistics and shipping and receiving, your warehouse, and I mean really, and then your management that's overseeing that. So you have a lot of a lot of different departments doing, a lot of different tasks all at the same time, trying to work together. And so, number one, I think one thing just to pull it back together is removing those silos of everybody working independently. And I can think about a window manufacturer that actually, they're creating these windows that are going to go. They're custom made for specific homes, and they're building them out to size. They get them on, a truck to be shipped out. The ability to take pictures, understand, did they meet the quality assurance in the process during building those out? When they get it on the truck, did they, see any issues or damages once it gets out and delivered to the job site? Is it in good condition? And what all of that does along the way, and utilizing again the ability to capture data either from mobile or in some format allows for you to have that visibility through the process that might improve warranty, fines or issues around, hey, we put the windows in, but now we have to take them back out. So cost associated with that. So there's the whole life cycle through the process from, manufacturing all the way even to a construction site. And so in the end, what I would like to just say is that, in a situation like that, it's about the individuals that are doing the work. And I really appreciated, I think it was, and I apologize, I'm looking back here. Oh my gosh.
We introduced you to a bunch of people today, so just
Yeah, Martin. I loved what Martin was saying, just around that. Is it's important that we understand that there's all sorts of ways that we can improve these processes. And so to wrap this up, at least on my side, from that field, or at least let's say from the manufacturing out to the field, back to the office, and then back down to the field, and that communication and removing those silos is going to be pivotal as we move forward in and using agentic AI and other opportunities of improvement, like goggles or things that can communicate or cameras that can understand whether you're safe on the site. All of that's going to play into safer, better, environments, less cost to the companies and the manufacturers, limiting delays in project time, et cetera. So overall, I think it's a really exciting time, and we're going to see improvements. And I think that you're right. It's not replacing individuals, it's helping put another tool in the pocket.
Matthew, before we go, a lot of mid-size manufacturers and construction companies may be on the lagging side in investing in field and intelligent operations and data collection and collaboration and safety, all the good things that we've been talking about. And what we're saying here is it's going to accelerate, right? The people who are investing are going to be able to take advantage of all these capabilities. Matthew, where should a company start? Give us a couple of starting points if they feel like they're lagging.
Yeah, well, I think the exciting part about today is the ability to get over that hurdle actually is becoming less and less with the use of AI. So, for example, I have a safety form that I need to create, my teams need to use. Well, companies like ours allow for you to import a form directly, a PDF form, and create a form within 60 to 90 seconds because of AI. So you have a checklist ready to go. And then being able to, so basically speeding up the process to take you from, hey, I don't even know how to start here, to I have something in my hand in about 90 seconds that I can start playing around with. Now, is it perfect? No, you need to work on it. But then ultimately, that barrier to entry is getting less and less to improve the process of your company. So I would say there are tools out there that are going to begin to speed up that process. So that kind of fear of moving into that, or I don't have time to even enter into that, is becoming less and less. And so I would just encourage, look into it, check into it, because you might be surprised how fast you can turn something around today.
Time to value is there, is what I'm hearing. Joanne, I'm going to give you the last word for 30 seconds and then I need to close. Joanne, go ahead.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth. One of my nomenclature is time to value. But one of the things that Matthew said, I want to key into, and that is begin to think about this like the dawn of an ecosystem play. Because to his point about a manufacturer and the windows are getting installed by a subcontractor or a third party. And now we have the opportunity to share the data across our trading partners in a way that we never could before. And in doing so, we make it better for everyone because together we're always better.
Thank you. Thank you, Joanne. And thank you, Matthew. Great talk today. Thanks to Derek, Liz, John, Heather, Joe, Martin. Thank you for joining us today. Great comment stream. I wasn't able to pick out all the best ones today. I'm going to have to go read them through when I do my summary article. But thank you for participating this week. I want to thank QuickBase for being our sponsor this week. QuickBase's AI-powered operations platform gives complex industries the data, connectivity, and visibility they need to keep large-scale projects on time, in budget, and promote a culture of safety and compliance. For more information, visit www.quickbase.com. Folks, our topic next week, critical thinking shapes AI data and digital transformation decisions. That came from a conversation a few weeks ago. And then last week, this came up, and then I saw Jamie Dimon mentioned it in a session I attended this week, talked about culture transformation, unplugging experiments, products and businesses that aren't working. We talk about being able to experiment a lot. How do we know what we're investing in is working? So those are our two upcoming topics. Thanks again for all of you who joined this week. Thanks again to our sponsor, QuickBase. And thank you, Matthew, for joining us as our special guest. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.